I would like to go fishing right now.
There
is something in the air out there, boys and girls. I don't know what it is, but watch. Walk into a convenience store. You see somebody really impatient, and they're just all fidgety and impatient, and they're going on about stuff. And then they get up to the counter when it's their turn, and it's like they put up a couch. They put on a mailbox up there, and they're moving in at the counter for a while. They just kind of forgot all about being impatient because I think, I'm not sure, Robert, why?
The world needed to revolve around them for a moment.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Do you think it's just something in the air, RJ?
Is it red tide?
It's got to be red tide.
I blame red tide for everything now. It's great, you know? I was late on paying my electric bill. I wrote red tide on the bottom of the bill.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I don't know what's going on with the world because every weird thing is happening now. I mean, I'm just... good news. Got some good news for you. Placida Pier is back open. Robert, true, false?
Yep, opened up on Friday. The county engineers deemed it safe to be on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So kind of walk out carefully.
Sure.
don't step through the missing planks.
Yes. I don't know why, but most of the time, if the government tells me, look over there to the right, that's the good place, I'm running to the left as hard as I can. If they tell me to go to the left, I'm looking over there, running to the right as far as I can. I don't know what the heck's going on here. All right. Let's see. The tropical storm that almost was. I've been praying since, what, the beginning of July, Robert, for a tropical storm.
At least the beginning of July.
A Category 1, a tropical storm, depression, something. Come right over the top of us, nice, slow moving. You know, yeah, maybe we'd lose a little power here and there. But a Hurricane Category 1 is a bad afternoon storm that lasts a little longer. Basically, yeah, about all it is.
Pretty much.
It ain't... It's nothing to be scared of. It's something to prep for. Not too many alcoholic beverages.
Right.
You got to keep it moderate. But it didn't happen. It didn't come. Now, it did clean up some of the areas south of us, and it did help us a little bit. It probably pushed out about 3 feet of water out of the harbor, was about what I noticed.
Yeah, I would say that would probably be pretty close. I mean, we had a couple moments where the tide was a little bit higher, but I think that kind of fell along with the moon phase at the moment. But as far as the significantly lower tides, yeah, it was pretty low.
I think once the water started going out, the outgoing tide, we had just enough wind to push it out a little faster than normal, and the waves were actually fairly good size for that afternoon.
Yeah.
And what that does is break up, disperse anything that's out there, whether it's good things or bad things.
Yeah.
But it would definitely help break up that red tide. But we get a little bump from that. And we definitely don't want a major storm hitting. A minor one would have been really nice coming right over the top of us.
Yeah.
Missed it by that much.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you're old enough to remember that.
I do.
You do? I know. Never mind. I mean, you probably wrote the show,
yeah,
RJ. You were probably one of the writers on that. You look a little like Agent, what was it? 99 was the girl, right? He was 89, right?
I don't remember.
Get Smart?
Well. Yeah, 89, I forget, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 89. Okay, so I'm old. I have a note here.
Shoe still buzzes. For some reason.
You just can't remember to answer the phone,
yeah, right?
Right. All right. The tropical storm. Let's see. We've got a lot of frustrated anglers out there right now. People wondering why they're not catching fish.
Yeah. It's the same thing every year. You know, it's like you were talking about last month in August, that August was average to even a little bit better than average fishing conditions and types of fish being caught. You know, August and September are your peak months for your rainfall. Rivers are flowing at usually pretty darn close to flood stage, both the Myakka and the Peace River. All of the canal systems are pumping out fresh water from all the ditches and little creeks and spill dams and everywhere else. You know, it's normal. It's a ton of fresh water coming through, plus we're at the peak of water temperature. You know, average water temperature is 90 to 94 degrees in the harbor. Warm water, low oxygen, lots of fresh water pouring out, tends to disperse fish. It puts them in weird spots where they normally wouldn't necessarily be. It brings in some of the species of fish that shouldn't be around. I mean, customer in the other day watched a Florida gar out there off the beach at Boca Grande swimming along in 3 feet of water.
Yeah.
You know, these animals get displaced, and so it's makes it a little tricky, but the main thing is you're hot. You're not going to run across the street to get a hot piece of pizza. If you're going for it.
I'm glad you said pizza.
If you're going to go for it, you're
going
to.
I'm listening to that going, where's he going? I was worried.
You may want that piece of pizza, but you darn sure aren't going to run across the street for it. You might walk over to it at a slow, leisurely pace, but you prefer to go next door for the ice cream cone. Same thing with the fish.
And if you're under 30, you just, I just ordered on my phone, have it delivered.
Right. Exactly. And use mom's credit card doing it.
So, RJ, that would hit a little too close to home, buddy.
A little too close to home, yeah.
Yeah, I wish you guys could have seen the look on his face.
I ain't giving her that credit card back. Ain't going to happen.
But the main thing is with the fish right now is to slow your presentation down. Get out early, come back early, go out late, come back late.
Now, one of the things about it is, believe it or not, it might rain today.
Oh, yeah, there's a... Jeez.
It is so funny watching the people go, oh, my gosh, it's raining. And they're so surprised. You're like, wait a minute, it's South Florida late in the summer. The weathermen have the easiest job in the world right now. It's probably going to rain, and you got a good chance you're going to have a thunderstorm during the day. It might only rain for a minute and a half.
Sure.
Or it could rain for 2 hours. It might, but you're probably going to get a little bit of rain, and it's going to be hot.
Yeah, it's going to be hot, humid, and a really darn good chance of rain.
So,
you know, it always floors me when
And it is illegal and absolutely... my trigger point is some moron going down 41. When we were leaving the show last week, we're heading back into town. It's pouring rain. We get a couple moments of whiteout. So everybody slows down. And inevitably, you pick a phrase for that person, turns on their emergency flashers. It's illegal in one end, and it's stupid in the other, because now... if you stop, you pull over to the road, that's when you turn on your emergency flashers. But when you're going down the street, we cannot tell if you're going to turn left or right, if your brakes come on, your brakes don't come on. You have no clues as to what you're doing. And we know you have no clue as to what you're doing. Otherwise, why would any sane, reasonable person sitting at a stoplight with six other cars and it's raining heavy... where did dad stop at a traffic light and they turn on their emergency flashers? That's illegal, you guys.
They wanted to make sure you knew that it was raining.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Well, and it's also to let all the people that don't turn on their headlights when it's raining know that it's raining. Oh, it's raining. Maybe I should turn my headlights on. No, let's just put the flashers on. That'll fix it.
The flashers always work.
The flashers will fix it.
And then they wonder why people ram into the back of them because, you know, they go to switch lanes. How do you know? You know, that's what blinkers are for, not flashers. All right. Tarpon on the beaches.
Yeah.
Been hearing this, picked up a lot. Yes, the beach is okay. The beach comes back. Things get bad, things get better, things get worse, things get good. And right now, not bad.
No, not bad at all. You know, right after this tropical storm went through, or whatever you want to call it, the weather effect went through.
Yeah, right after we had the weather event.
Yeah.
Boring.
You know, the waters cleared up a little bit. It had enough wind to it, enough rain to it to blow apart some of the little patches of red tide that were out there. But the bait moved in. the Spanish mackerel moved in real close. Sure, I got a report of that just before we came here. And the tarpon have been out there right literally off the beaches and in Boca Grande Pass itself.
All right, so here's the question, the pink elephant with the big purple butt. Placita Trust is open. What do you think the odds are that it's going to be worthwhile going out?
For tarpon or just...
No, just for fishing.
Oh, for fishing in
because
general? Absolutely.
The beaches are good. There's bait along the beaches. There's this, that. And then you just said we're hearing schools of Spanish mackerel coming in through the passes, going into the ICW.
Yep.
It's amazing. But
yeah, no, I mean, the Spanish mackerel should probably be pushing in there with this bait that's starting to move in just right there off the beaches. And, you know, their bonnet heads will obviously be around. I mean, that structure's been there for, what, over 100 years. So
1860s or 70s they put that in.
Okay, so over 100 years it's been there. You know, it's a phenomenal habitat. And the best part about it is that because of the red tide, unfortunately, there's been less boaters out there, so there's been a lot less pressure. So those fish should probably be stacked up underneath and around that trestle in pretty good numbers, especially for the shore guys. I think it'd be really a positive thing.
Believe it or not, they went out there with the Elgin fishing pier, used to be a railroad trestle, and the Placita out to Boca Grande because they were shipping so much phosphates, cattle. I mean, this was a pretty industrialized harbor back then. But it was a lot less money to run the train out to the end of Boca Grande, Gasparilla Island, than it was to dredge the harbor out. Because they were trying to bring boats up to load cattle, and they did for years, but mostly by barge, at Bayshore Pier. And they were trying to ship phosphates from Bayshore Pier. But it just wouldn't work out. So it went from Bayshore Pier, when that did not work, they went out to Boca Grande. And it was because of the depth of the water. They
makes
couldn't get the
sense.
Big boats up the harbor. They couldn't dredge it all and effectively. So they said, okay, we can't really dredge it, so let's run the railroad right out to the deeper water.
Makes
and so they
sense.
End up having to dredge outside of Boca Pass in the lane out there, that channel. They dredged that every 3 to 4 years from 1911 to 2001. And that's why it's filling in now. In 1911, when they went to dredge outside of Boca Grande Pass, the deep hole was already there. But right outside of that, it was 11, 12 feet deep. And that was just enough if you had a high tide to get some of those big boats in and out. And it was harder getting them out because they were full of stuff. They had to wait to high tide to get out. So they started dredging it, got it down to 30 feet, and maintained it every 3 to 4 years until 2001. But mostly the reason was that that turned out to be our port was because they couldn't dredge the rest of the harbor.
It makes more sense that way, economically and physically.
So around Placita right now, I'm thinking the snappers should be there. We were having reports last week about sheephead in... especially on some of the reefs, but a little bit inside. What are the odds?
Slim.
Slim.
I mean, it's not a targetable
sharks?
Fish. It's going to be a bycatch. Bonnethead sharks for sure. Probably some juvenile bull sharks and possible black tips. Because
right.
They usually follow those Spanish mackerel around this time of year.
So look for, if you start catching Spanish mackerel, it's time to sling a big shark rod out.
Absolutely.
Put a big chunk of mullet out there and a shark rod.
And the possibility of a cobia or a tarpon as a bycatch would definitely not surprise me.
All right. Now, I don't know of what the weather phenomenon is, but it's beautiful in the morning. I mean,
yeah.
This is the weirdest August, September I've been through in years. At this time of year, it's usually 80-some degrees, humid. So at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock, you get up, you go outside to have a little nicotine and coffee, and you walk out, you get hit in the face with that heat and humidity.
Yeah.
And right now, I mean, I'm going to tell you, three mornings out of the week, I almost want to go in and get a jacket on.
Yeah.
It's like 70, 74 degrees, light breeze, it's beautiful. These are some of the nicest mornings. I mean, it's you would think it's November. until 8 o'clock, and then oh my god,
yeah,
it gets like flip the switch. I'm going to die. It's hot.
Yeah, but yeah. By 8 o'clock, it definitely reminds you that it is August and September. But that magic time between 5 and 7:30, it's pretty darn nice.
Yeah, I mean, up till 8 o'clock, it's not bad. But by 8 o'clock, it's getting hot. Have you heard anything with the weather, RJ? Are they talking about any? I mean, is this a La Nina year? Is La Nina out there throwing westerly winds at us? You know, the cool phenomenon in the Pacific. I can't figure out what's going on.
No,
it's literally
I have no
baffling
idea.
Me as to why this is. And the reason I talk about weather a lot, because weather directly relates to where you fish and how you fish. Do I want to go deep? Do I want to go shallow? Do I want to go early? Do I want to go late? Everything about the weather helps me find fish. And I got nothing on this.
Yeah, we talk to the National Weather Service, you know, on a weekly basis. I have not heard anything from the climate guys about if things are changed or if the weather is behaving differently. I'm just enjoying it, just like you. Get up early in the morning, go sit on the porch, and enjoy the weather.
Here's my thing, though. To me, this looks like a La Nina weather pattern. A lot of westerly winds. Hurricanes veering off out in the Atlantic before they get here, and the weather's a little screwy. We get a couple days of rain and storms where it's kind of doing that almost all day, and La Nina is different because they always come from Seattle down kind of across to us, but with La Nina, they just come west to east. And so to me, it looks like La Nina kicked back in. Count for a little bit of that cooler weather in the mornings and stuff.
Could be. We've had three things come off the African coast recently. One, and they're calling it a fish storm. Like, I learned that from the Weather Service guys the other day. The only thing it affects is fish, so don't worry about it. So that's going to be a fish storm, he said. Don't worry about it. That's the one that's curving up into the Atlantic. The next one may also curve, but the one that just came off the African coast is a little further south, and they're concerned that it's going to get underneath the Bermuda High and come up and around. So we're watching that one.
I tell you what, don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Don't consider it. If you think it a couple weeks away, go down today by, I like to drink that cranberry diet ginger ale. So get a couple extra 12-packs. Make sure you got 5 or 10 gallons of gas extra laying around. You can always use it in a lawnmower. Do a little bit of sensible prep. And that way, if there ever does become a storm, you're not running around trying to get stuff. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me either that 2 days before the storm hits, the stores are empty because everybody decided to go out all at once and buy bottled water.
And what kills me is I'm sitting out in front of a store, and this guy pulls up in a car. This man is obese. He's looking for bottled... Do they have bottled water in that store? I said, but I don't know. I wasn't looking for any. And he's like, I got to find water. There's a hurricane. And I'm thinking to myself, bud, you haven't drank a bottle of water in 15 years. You know, go get yourself a few 44-ounce Coca-Colas. I mean, I could tell that's what you're doing. But a little bit of liquid. Anyway, if there is a storm coming, we'll deal with it when it comes up, but they're too far away to even pay attention to, outside of some minor prep. We talked about tarpon on the beaches. We talked about Placida Pier opening. How wonderful nice it is in the mornings. That's going to flip us into a little bit. I want to go over redfish and snook are closed. You can't keep them, but there seems to be a lot of redfish around for a fish that's being closed so somebody can get a political office. And that's the only reason snook and redfish are closed right now. It's nothing to do with numbers of fish or anything else. Just so some idiot politician can say, look at me. He's doing a bad job. He's doing a bad job. I'm the good guy. No, I'm the good guy. That's all it is. Political garbage. Has nothing to do with the fish. That's the one thing I'm absolutely positive of. Where are the redfish right now, Robert?
The east and west wall is where I'm hearing the most reports of them from, but even getting a few reports of them in the canals in both Bunnegord Isles and the Port Charlotte canals. But if you really want to target them, it's definitely going to be east side, west side, even Bull and Turtle Bay. I haven't gotten a lot of reports down along, say, Whidden Bay, Whidden Creek area, but with the way the water's been cleaned up the last basically 2 weeks, 10 days out there, wouldn't surprise me if they're all along the bushes over there too.
Well, fish generally like to get into those areas where the red tide was.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not around there, A, you have cleaner water, because not only does the red tide kill fish, it kills bacteria as well. And a lot of the other stuff that's coming down. I mean, it's not a, you know, if it's a live organism, the red tide can mess with it. Except, doesn't bother shrimp, doesn't bother crabs, you know, stuff like that. Clams, oysters, all that, live through it. They, in fact, thrive in it.
Right.
So, do you think that might be one of the reasons why, after a red tide event goes through, that those areas fill up a little faster, because so much of that stuff is out in the wide open trying to feed on all these fish that died during the red tide, that it brings in predators for them after the red tide's gone?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and even if you don't...
I'm glad you said absolutely, because I just made that stuff up as I was saying it.
No, it's perfect sense, because you don't realize, okay, the fish have been dead for a week there. There's still skeletal remains. There's still nutrients that are in the soil. And when you're talking about the nutrients in the soil, you're talking about little worms, little copepods, stuff like that, that are going to feed on those micronutrients, which brings in the shrimp, crabs, little bait fish, which is in turn going to bring in your bigger predators.
So, you know, while red tide is not a good thing in any way, in 99.998%, it's pretty much bad things, but it does have, because for years I was talking about red tide and I did not know one good thing about it, and that just makes me nuts.
I got a question for you. Let's sure. Go out on a limb here. What if red tide is actually a good thing?
All right, explain to me, because I know a few good effects from after red tide. A lot more bait, cleaner water, a lot of this stuff. And I had to dig hard. It took a long time to find these things out, because, you know, you cannot get information solely from the internet, because if they're not paying to be up there, you're not going to find them. You know, it's a pay-for-play thing on the internet now.
Sure. But, okay, let's say red tide's good for the environment. If you think about it, red tide's been around forever.
Yeah, the first possible traces were when Jesus fed the multitude. The water turned red, the fish all floated to the top and floated to shore. And it's not like saying it's blasphemous. If it's God and he wants a red tide to feed a bunch of people, they're not poisoned, they're just suffocated.
Right.
It would be a very simple way, if I was a supreme being, rather than going down there and taking my hand and throwing all these fish on shore, just go, okay, give me a little red tide there. All right, there you guys, chow down.
Well, and here's an example of it. You've got all these positives. And for somebody who's...
I've got a few. I don't know if I've got a lot.
That's more than 99.9% of the population out there.
I'm trying. I like being positive. I like being happy.
Let's look at it this way. If red tide has the potential of being good in some way, how many centuries, no, not centuries, but decades, did the Department of Forestry think that fires were a bad thing for the forests?
Oh, for probably the first two centuries. And then all of a sudden one day they realized that the forest fire, it harms some of the trees, but some of the trees it burns fast and they go by them, like a lot of the bigger pines and oaks and stuff, the fire doesn't actually kill them. But what it does do is kill all the pests, the beetles, the bugs, everything that is
actually... The small undergrowth that can create a much worse fire.
Yeah,
you know, some of the worst fires ever that have done some of the most destruction anywhere have been in areas where they have not done controlled burns for 10, 20, 30 years. And so all that undergrowth was there that got screaming hot, flared out of control.
Killed the trees entirely.
Killed the trees, burned hundreds of people out of their homes, everything, the mass destruction from that. So controlled burns was a Mother Nature thing, and we stopped doing that, controlling it. Now all of a sudden we're realizing, hey, we need to do controlled burns for one, preventative maintenance from burning down people's homes, but also to make wildlife flourish.
All right.
Maybe now, that red tide needs to come through, do a little bit of destruction to help control some of the bacterias, some of those bad algaes, or just some even the good algaes that are starting to get out of hand. And it doesn't kill it per se in one way. It kills it in the aspect that it's competing for the exact same food that some of those other algaes are, so it starves them out. That helps clean up the water a little bit better. It re-nourishes with the death back into the sand that's going to feed all of your little critters along the shorelines, the whole nine yards.
All right. Now, RJ, Robert has proposed that red tide could be Mother Nature's forest fire.
I'm going to go along with that because let's take human intervention out of this. Let's take phosphate overflows and the sewer system overflows and fertilizer and all of that out of the picture. When red tide occurred here, you know, in the 1800s, it occurred in small patches. And those small patches were like cleaning with a sponge. And the majority of the fish and the wildlife and the manatees were able to get out of the way.
That's a supposition that the red tides were not as strong as they are today. And that may or may not be true. Red tide feeds off a certain type of food, whether it's phosphates or nutrients in one form or another. There could have been very catastrophic red tides back in the 15, 14, 13, 1700s, 1800s, 19s, whatever. But if nobody was there to see it, was it a bad red tide? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, so I agree, I'm saying that's why I'm only going back to about the 1800s where they started recording this.
I would say that leaving out even the size of it, but if a red tide was going on then without human intervention, still...
You say it over and over again. It's a naturally occurring phenomena, but that doesn't mean that we can't take a naturally occurring phenomena and make it blow up like we've just seen in these last couple of years.
Well, naturally occurring phenomenons can really suck and be really horrible.
Yeah.
Take a tornado, for instance. I don't think one good thing a tornado does.
Well, Hurricane Charlie, that was a naturally occurring phenomena.
You know, but at least with Charlie, hurricanes are nature's way of balancing. An area gets too hot, too this, too that, and a lot of times some kind of storm comes and balances it out. I don't know that a tornado would ever balance anything out. And when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking tornado, pretty much something right out of the gates of hell. And I think they're bad. So I don't think, and arsenic, anthrax, Ebola, they're all natural. So being natural doesn't make it good. There can be some pretty horrific natural things. But I think Robert's got a pretty cool point. Could red tide be the forest fires of the ocean?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly what's going on. As red tide, it cleans things up. You mentioned anthrax. Anthrax is a way to thin herds out when there's too many. Same thing with raccoons in Florida. They get distemper when there's too big of a population. Knocks the population down. You know, when there's too many for the environment to handle, something natural comes along and deals with the situation.
All right, now, Robert or RJ, you guys figure out who wants to answer. What if the red tide there, because when we talk about things overpopulation, what if it's not about an overpopulation of fish, which it's probably not? What if it's an overpopulation of a certain type of bacteria or algae or something in the water? You know, could be another algae.
Macroalgae or a microalgae, absolutely.
If there was an overpopulation of a different type of algae, the red tide could be the response to that. And the fish are just innocent bystanders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go along. I just read an article on the internet, so it must be true, that there are certain types of blue-green algae that feed, or that red tide organisms feed off of this particular type of blue-green algae. So it makes me think that...
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, well...
But that's okay.
I gave it a shot.
Well,
it's true to the point that there are algae. There's a sawdust algae. There's a bunch of other ones that when they die, they make the perfect fertilizer for red tide.
Sure.
But the problem that I have is when you say blue-green algae, people associate it with the type that's in the Caloosahatchee, in the Cape Coral canals. That particular type of blue-green algae dies if you put a little bit of salt on it. It cannot handle salt at all. It gets anywhere close to the Gulf, it dies. So that's my only issue with that.
Well, not only that, but there's a lot of different types of blue-green algae. Here's an example right now. You know, we have red tide in salt water. They have a blue-green algae in fresh water that is equally as deadly to fish as red tide is in salt water. And they're having a problem with that bloom right now in Lake Erie.
Yeah.
You know, it's killing the fish and
I
stuff like
Maine's
that.
I think Maine's having a problem with it. A lot of the northern states are really having problems with it.
So freshwater gets its own version, but a different type. You know, and that blue-green algae is kind of like salmonella. There's literally 100 different types of blue-green algae. Some are toxic, some are not. You know, it's just like salmonella. You've got different grades of it. You know, you go home and you get a little bit of diarrhea when you get home after eating somewhere. That was probably a mild form of salmonella that you got somewhere. Then you got to the extreme where you actually have to be hospitalized or actually die from it. That's a different strain of salmonella. Still salmonella, just A grade, D grade.
The one on the bottom gives you the runs. The one on the top makes you bleed out of your eyeballs and die.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay, we get that. All right. I just figured I'd kind of clarify it.
Right. That definitely did it for me.
So, anyway, where we're going with this is Strike King, and you're not going to believe this, but they want Fish and Franks to do some TV shows for them. And they're going to be segments on TV shows. They've got a couple national shows, Protein Something, and I forget. I'll get you the numbers. I'm old. I didn't write it down. Now I can't remember. But the one thing about this show that we're going to be doing and the challenge that Strike King gave to us was showing that you could take a Strike King lure and catch a bass with it and then go out and catch a saltwater fish with it. And I have some different Strike King stuff here. And now the far-fetched one is their shimmy stick. It's kind of like Yamamoto's?
Yeah, the Senko Yamamoto.
Senkos or the Yum Dingers. But the shimmy stick, it's a worm. It's got ridges all the way up and down. Now, to me, I know a bass will eat this. And I happen to pick the silver with green glitter in it. And I've caught bass with this. It's a great bass lure. But I'm thinking if I wanted to try and do this for redfish or snook or something like that, and especially with the water so warm, I'm going to wacky rig it. I'm going to put the rubber band on with the hook on it right in the center of this and then just give it kind of toss it out and then start just wiggling it just a little bit, kind of like what are the sandworms they got out there?
Yeah, sandworms.
And if it's laying there on top of the grass, I think that that's going to go. Now, RJ, what do you think? We know it catches bass. I'm going to guarantee it. I'm going to put that as a given. What do you think? Would you use that in saltwater? Any kind of tricks? Because we're going to say at the end of this which one I think we're going to pick. Because we got to pick one to do this TV show with. Strike King's coming now. We're looking at the shimmy stick. It's okay. You can say something.
I'm thinking.
All right, you're thinking. All right, I'm going to go on.
I'm thinking right. Eel. You got to find some morsel that a redfish is going to eat. What are they going to be willing
to eat? It
doesn't
have to be a redfish. It could be a cobia, any kind of saltwater fish.
I've caught cobia on rubber worms.
So you're in for the shimmy stick. We know it does bass. You're in for cobia. All
right? Yeah. I would say you could catch a
now,
cobia with that.
Jig head, worm hook?
Yeah, jig head, and you'd have to make it wiggle like a
jig head. Okay, casting them with a jig head. Robert, the worm?
I'm going to go snapper and grouper. I'm going to go with snapper and grouper and use a drop shot rig or a porgy rig. I'm going to fish it just right on the bottom with it just hanging off the side and just letting it wiggle in the current just a little bit, because there's so many types of worms that we have naturally occurring in salt water, but 99% of them are nocturnal, so you never see them. But fish feed on them. We have one here called a bristle worm or a fire worm.
Right.
They get up to 3 feet long.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And, okay. And they eat other fish.
On a side note, Austrian segues, you got to hold your spot. Remember when I was so disappointed you told me what the sea monsters in Naples were? I was so disappointed. We have these 12, 14, you know, Loch Ness monsters. I mean, these things are like 15 feet long. How long do they get? 30 foot?
30 foot, I think.
These things get up to like 30 feet long. We had a Loch Ness monster here in the harbor. I had seen it. It kind of humps up. You know, like you see the pictures of the Loch Ness Monster, the head's up. You see the body coming up out of the water. And I had seen it. Other people had seen it. I'm going, man, we have our own. We have the Charlotte Harbor Monster, the Loch Ness Monster of Charlotte Harbor. And it looked like the Loch Ness Monster. And Robert's going to go stick that pin right in my bubble. Blue. I mean, I was so excited. What is it, Robert?
An oarfish?
Yeah, that's how excited I was after he said it, too. He knew exactly what it was. It lives out in the Gulf but comes up in the shallow waters, right?
Only when it's sick or screwed up. It's a deep water fish.
Well, that's why it came to see me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's possible.
A little screwed up, said, hey, I'll go talk to Frank. See, you know, maybe I've worked this stuff out.
It's the longest bony fish in the world. You know, they're pretty impressive looking. Same with that's the other one, a lance fish. Yep. Is very similar.
But we have these oar fish in the area. I had no idea. I was living blissfully my sea monster dreams. Next one up is a curl tail. Now, Strike King's got a group of product they call Rage. And what that is like when you have a curl tail, the edge of the curl tail has a flat spot on it, giving it a little more thump, a little more noise than what a standard curl tail has. And it's a little heavier on the vibration thing. So now, this is, by all estimations, a trout lure. We used to sell them two curl tails on a thing as a love
tandem
lure.
Rig.
Tandem rigs. They were the trout lures. What are your thoughts on the curl tail, RJ?
Yeah, same thing, trout. I've caught a lot of trout on a curl tail like that.
Now, I've used them on bass. I've not had a lot of success with them on bass. I know a lot of people that have. Me, I haven't done well on bass with curl tails.
Neither have I.
It's not a favorite thing of mine. I think if we were to choose that one, I'd go out in the flats and I'd be like, pom, pom, I'd get a trout, I'd get this, maybe a redfish or a snook or something like that, ladyfish, jacks. They're going to beat it up. I'm not sure I could catch a bass with it. I know it's a bass lure.
Yeah, I've never caught a bass with that either, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And I've always used, you've got a package of white ones there, or cream, whatever that color is, and that's all I've ever used in fresh water, and I've never caught a bass with it.
Okay.
So if there's a different color, that might make a difference. And, you know, like you say, other people have been successful with it, but I have not.
But I would say I'm not going to pick that one, because that curl tail, I know I can catch fish in salt water with it, and I know other people that have, but not one of the three of us has ever caught a bass on a curl tail.
No. The only place where I could see that being good personally with my minimal experience would be smallmouth bass or walleye.
Yeah, that's but I don't have those here to catch.
Right,
so
exactly.
Tag, I'm out of that. We're not picking the curl tail as well.
Right.
Because I got to go out, be on a boat, you know, and actually make this happen. So that's kind of one of the reasons we're talking over. What I'm hoping is if you know of a good one here, you can always email me, frank@fishandfranks.com. The next one I'm going to go to is, this is a Rage anaconda, and it's a worm with a massive tail on it, and the Strike King anaconda. I'm trying to get one out of the pack because I didn't do that so you guys could see it. I know what they are. What do you think, Robert? You've got it in your hand.
I'm going to catch Kobe on it for sure. There's no problem with that. You know, it's a basically it's a curl tail, ribbon tailed worm.
It's kind of like a modification of like an old culprit, but the curl part of the tail is massive.
No, it's got a really significant sickle to it. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I can imagine that going through the water, there's a lot of action as that moves along.
Yeah, I think minimal effort, you're going to get so much wiggling out of that. It's going to be pretty impressive.
I'm going to say 100% on the bass. You know, I didn't think we'd have to talk about these on bass. We got to the curl tail, and I said, man, I've never caught a bass on one of those. But this thing, 100% on the bass. I know I'm going to catch bass with this. Robertson for cobia. You, RJ, what are you going
for? Oh, yeah, definitely cobia. Anything that swims like an eel is good for cobia.
I think this might even be a pretty good redfish bait. The only thing I would do is cut the worm body part of it, which is now about 4 inches, maybe 5. I would cut that down to, so from the where the ribbon starts, because it's got this massive ribbon on it, I'd go about 3/4 of an inch, cut it off there, put a jig head on it, and bounce that thing on the flats with a little bit of swimming.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically looking, you know, for this structure here where you've only got about that inch of head on it. I'm thinking, to me, that's got, it's probably redfish, but you know, I just had that flash of watching this go through a school of jacks.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be anything left of it, but man, you'd have some fish on.
Yeah.
All right, getting into it, the number one thing, I know this works. This is cheating because I've got the Rage Tail Crawdad Tail, and it's the Rage Craw. The baby craw is the one that the guy's using right now. It was all about the larger one, now it's about the smaller one. And these Rage Claws, and you know what's weird? Because I happen to think about it, and I have caught a bass on a twin tail grub, a curly tail grub, but that has two tails where the curls, you know, face each other, oppose each other. And to me, that's what this one looks like. That's what I liked about it. But
yeah,
what makes this one good is the claws are actually curl tails, but it's got that extra Rage Tail lip on it. We know it catches redfish, and we know it catches bonnet sharks, and I'm positive it catches sharks.
Yeah, and I could see that. And I would probably be using it to mess around offshore with. I mean, I'll bet you I could get a snapper or a grouper to eat this thing. I'll bet I could even get a triple tail to eat this thing.
I bet you triple tail and blackfin tuna would beat the tar out of this.
Right.
But crawdads are great on bass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that kind of goes without saying. I mean, you can go anywhere in the world and throw a crawdad to a bass and he's going to eat it.
So this has got to be a pretty high contender. It was funny because Carl was going up to Jacksonville to do a tournament. And he says, you know, what kind of soft plastics should we bring? They said, Strike King Crawdad. And I'm like, really? I thought we were the only ones, period, that did that, the crawdads for redfish. And it turns out it's a big thing in Jacksonville, and it's the Rage Claw. I mean, it's the Strike King one, the same one we found.
I'll bet it's going to be pretty big in Louisiana, too, for that, because you've got, you know, in Jacksonville, you've got those sawgrass and all those creeks.
Or did they just listen to our radio show and steal it from us?
They could have.
We know we have listeners in Jacksonville.
They could have. You know, and then in Louisiana, they have a huge crawfish population anyway, so all
that
of those fish.
That doesn't mean they found it.
No.
It could. I'm gonna go maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
You think, okay, go ahead and explain yourself, but I'm not going to believe they found it until I actually hear.
No, I don't
Why
know.
Would this be good in Louisiana? Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
Because they have
Make it good.
They have a few crayfish there.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Just a few.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I don't know if I've ever heard of crawdads and crayfish in Louisiana.
Nope, never heard of them.
No, I don't. That doesn't really sound much Cajun
to
me.
No, I think they ate them all.
Yeah, I think they ate them all. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get in trouble using one of them for bait up there or not. You know, it's like fine dining.
Yeah,
sacrilegious. You go fishing suckle eye.
I forget how that goes.
So,
but no, I think it'd work very, very well. And both sizes, even. I don't care if it's a small one or the large one. I think it's going to work out pretty darn good. But, you know, like you said, you know, the biggest thing is with these rage tails, people don't realize is that the unique part about them is every one of them kind of have a weird flared out, almost like flat spot that's sideways to the rest of the design of whatever it happens to be, whether it's that curl tail or their worm. You know, that flat part creates some resistance in the water as it's being worked and creates a different type of vibration with minimal effort, because you've got two pieces in two different directions. Right. So hydrodynamically, it's going to screw with everything and make it act funky.
Okay, this is the frog. Now, I know this catches bass, 100%. And I was using the other one that, God, why can't I ever pull the name? I can see the package in my head, the paddle tail frog one, Ribbit. Okay. I'd been using the Ribbit frogs and on snook, because the Ribbit have those little paddle tail feet on them.
Right.
And it really wasn't working as good. It really has kind of start and stop spurts. And then I found out some of the other guys had switched to the curl tail feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been doing pretty good on those. Now, I'm going to say, for as far as the snook lure goes, now I'm going to just throw it out there. Yes, I know the rage tail frog is going to catch bass. Absolutely. I give it 100%. I get it. But as a snook lure, I think this is going to be my frog this year. I had RJ looking at it, because it's halfway between the paddle tail feet and the curl tail feet.
Yeah.
It's between the Ribbit and the Horny Toad. What's the name of that brand, Horny Toad?
Zoom.
Okay. Zoom has the Horny Toad. Ribbit has, and the Zoom Horny Toad has the little curl tail feet on it. And the Ribbit frogs have the paddle tails. This is the perfect in between.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rigging it with a weedless worm hook. So what do you think? Freshwater, saltwater, you're going to give it a... I'm going to give it a pass on the bass. How about you?
Well, definitely bass. I've got my doubts. You know, a part of the problem with a lure that looks like that is some of it is to catch the fishermen to buy it. It looks like a frog, and I'm thinking, well, what looks like a frog in saltwater? But I think if you look at that lure and picture it going through the water, that might be more crayfish kind of...
All right, if you picture this as going along the top with just a weedless worm hook in it, you're using it as a topwater lure, you're getting a lot of nice little splashing off those feet. But you could put a jig head on it, say, you know, 3/8 ounce, quarter ounce jig head, and have it drop right to the bottom, and it would actually be kind of a paddle tail.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So you could use it as a swim bait or as a topwater or whatever. Pretty versatile little bait. I did. Literally never thought about putting a jig head into a frog until this very moment. But it's kind of one of the things when we're doing this, I'm trying to expand my thing and say, well, why would I not? But what about a jig head in that frog? That might actually be a pretty good little lure.
Not all frogs swim on the surface.
Well, even forget the frog, just the curl tail aspect of it.
Curl tail aspect of it, or, you know, like he was saying, it kind of simulates similar to that crayfish if you wanted to. You know, depending on the jig head you put on it, you could get like a stand-up jig head, so you'd have just the feet standing up in the air, so it would look like a crawfish holding its claws up in a protective manner. You could do a regular jig head on it, so it's actually staying more parallel to the sand, and work it along like you would a paddle tail or a curl tail. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could do it. Or you even put, like, a weighted worm hook on it and work it subsurface under the water and get it to work that way. You know, I know I'd catch a snook on it in a heartbeat.
All right.
I've watched them eat frogs, so I got no problems with that. I actually feed them frogs every now and then behind the house, so
I don't like those Cuban tree frogs.
I do not like those
Cuban tree frogs. Are a non-native invasive species that are literally wiping out the native Florida frogs.
Yeah. All of our little green tree frogs that you don't see anymore, it's not an environmental thing. It's an actually invasive species, which is those big tree frogs that you see around your porch light now.
Now, the frogs that are here are poisonous to our native frogs, so our native frogs can't even eat them.
Our native frogs aren't big enough to eat them.
Oh, well, I thought you said they were poisonous.
Well, they are. They are poisonous, but the Cuban tree frogs just flat out eat our green tree frogs because our green tree frogs, even an adult green tree frog, is half the size or smaller than a sub-adult Cuban tree frog. They just can't, and, you know, frogs will eat just about anything.
Throw a frog in the water as long as it's a Cuban.
if he's got nice little bumps and they look like little pearls on his back, grab him and toss him in the water.
Just be careful if you handle one to make sure you wash your hands thoroughly because
don't touch your face.
They do have a toxin on their skin that is literally like putting mace in your eyeballs. It's not fun. Yeah. You'll learn real quick that you made a mistake.
That's the only reason I don't like the Cuban tree frogs is I grew up handling frogs and, you know, playing with them and doing all that, and then you get these Cuban tree frogs who are trying to poison you because you're playing with them, and I'm sorry, toss them in the canal. Let's get even with them. Get rid of these Cubans.
Right.
I know some Cuban people I like, but I ain't liking the frog at all.
No, not at all.
Most Cuban people I like. Not all, most. Okay.
So what are you looking at there, RJ?
I am really impressed with these. What's the name of this lure?
All right, I have to tell you, this is the one that Strike King advised me that would probably be the best one to use. This is the Rage Swimmer. These things are impressive. There's a couple other sizes. I didn't bring all the sizes, but these things are impressive little bait. First impression, Robert, take some out of the package, toss them in your hand. There's the bigger version. Now,
It's got a different kind of, the paddle tail's a little different to me, but not significant enough to get me excited.
Oh, this is one of the best hot weather, cold weather paddle tail shads in the industry. Because the whole idea behind hot weather and cold weather is slow down, slow down, slow down, slow down. That is a monster paddle tail on them for the size of the bait, and it's very thinly attached. This is not going to be a lure that you say, okay, I'm going to get a bunch of hits, and it's going to hold up. It's going to hold up a little bit, but the whole idea behind this is you can put a lightweight jig head on it and reel it very, very, very slowly, and that paddle tail is going to keep moving at the slowest speeds possible that it's going to move. And the whole body's covered in ridges. So all that water cavitating through all those ridges is creating noise. That sloppy paddle tail on the back. I'm not sure this would be my favorite bait for when the water is, 75 to 80 degrees or 74 to 78. I'd say perfect water temperature, 73 to 78. I'm not sure this would be it because it's going to make a lot of noise. This is one of the noisiest baits I've seen in a long time. Just from what I know of cavitation, sloppy tails, the whole bit. Is it going to be a very cost-efficient bait?
No.
You're going to lose a lot of them to getting bit by various things. But you're going to catch a lot of fish with it.
Is it just me or the ridges facing forward?
Yes, the ridges look like they face forward.
The ridges are actually facing forward, so it's going to create even more vibration and more water friction.
More cavitation, more friction, more noise. Is that or is that not probably one of the top hot water / cold water snook, redfish, trout, jack, whatever, for saltwater you've ever seen?
I think it's pretty impressive. I mean, I never looked at the tail that close up until now when I was playing with it, but the tail is going to be the deciding factor on that for me with that
with
slow
extra
motion.
With the cavitation on the ridges and that slow motion. What do you think of it, RJ?
I'm just really impressed with it. I think that I'm going to be down to the store and I'm going to stock up on these guys.
Yeah, and I know they catch bass. I mean, that's just a given. But this is what we call radio fishing. And Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, the blind tarpon himself, and RJ in the control booth. So say goodbye, blind tarpon.
Goodbye.
Say bye, RJ.
Goodbye, RJ.
Henny Youngman, where are you when I need you? Fish and Frank, we'll see you guys next week. Bye.